Hello and welcome to episode 18. So following on from recent weeks, we have another interview for you on this episode, this time with John Hamilton, the creator and producer of the epic sci-fi short Trinity. Now, some of you may or may not know, I host bi-weekly events in Altspace for Via VR, chatting to fellow creators about their work, which is where this interview is taken from. It was great chatting to John and hearing about how this large-scale short was made, and it also ended up being one of the longest events we've had so far due to the numerous audience questions after. If you're on Altspace, keep a lookout for our next event and come along and say hi. Okay, I'm going to stop waffling now, so here's my interview with John Hamilton.
So, yeah, I'm going to introduce you to this fine gentleman to my left here, John Hamilton. John, if you just want to introduce yourself and, yeah, just tell us how you got into this crazy world of VR.
Sure. Hi, everybody, and thanks for coming tonight. I actually started in the film and television business quite a few years ago, 15 to 20 years ago. I used to run a company which some of you might have heard of because it just sold to Hasbro recently, although I left the company in 2012, a company called E1 Entertainment. We used to do a lot of feature films and some television and a lot of kids shows, actually. And in 2014, I saw my first VR experience. And of course, like so many others, just dove into it because the potential of the platform for me was just so exciting. And Trinity actually was the project that we launched the company on, if you can believe it, almost 4 years ago. We spent a couple of years doing R&D and then got it produced over the last 2 years. And then released it actually last fall. So yeah, that's my story.
Cool. So yeah, you're one of the co-founders of Unlimited, a VR production company. So do you guys just work on your own projects or do you do like client or brand work as well?
To be honest, these days, and actually most of the work that we've done throughout the history of the company has been service work for mostly brand clients. And then recently we've been doing a lot of immersive learning work, interactive immersive learning work, usually for either corporate or industrial, hazardous environment training, that kind of stuff, which is really actually fun work. And we're learning a lot actually about VR and applying it to a lot of our projects like Trinity. But we are still doing a lot of creative projects as well. And we're still hoping to do another 4 episodes of Trinity once we can get our financing together. Yeah.
Cool. So was that the original plan then when you started then to sort of do client work as well as just general films and stuff?
No, really, you know, my main interest has always been in fiction, you know, feature films and television. So when we started Unlimited, it was really much more to get into entertainment, cinematic VR. And the market is, you know, hasn't been as quick to pick up as we thought it would be. But to be honest, just because of the R&D that we had to do just to get Trinity done, we had to do all sorts of other work. And for the first couple of years, actually, you know, the phone was kind of ringing off the hook. So we've done a lot of we just did a lot of service and brand work. We did. I'll just give you an example, and I'm sorry, we should have had some slides, but we've done projects for Universal Pictures. We did the VR experience for 50 Shades Darker, which was kind of fun to do. Yeah, it was kind of interesting to do. We also did a VR series, which is actually available, still available, actually. It's called Falling to Me, which was for A&E Television, and it was a promotional series for one of their... promotional VR series for one of their TV series that they launched about 3 years ago. We've done a ton of different work over the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, sounds like it. So let's go back to Trinity then. How did that come about? What was the inspiration for that?
Well, essentially, we sort of launched the company wanting to do the highest end work possible in sci-fi. So back when we launched in 2015. There weren't a lot of companies who were doing high-end visual effects. in VR, and then even less so over live action companies doing interactive overlay over live action. So really, we launched Trinity as kind of a pilot project to combine all of those into one project. I had an idea originally, which was a linear story. It wasn't interactive. That sort of the only thing that's even remotely like it was that it had androids in it. The story actually evolved quite a lot from that original concept that we had. But yeah, so Trinity was really something that we launched as our first sort of marquee project for the company, and also something that really was pushing boundaries at the time, was really pushing the boundaries way ahead of where anyone else was working in VR at the moment at that time.
Yeah. So did you write it yourself? Like, was there any like movies or anything like that you took inspiration from?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm a huge sci-fi fan. So, you know, obviously, you know, Blade Runner was a big inspiration. And then I think The Matrix also was another inspiration. I think those two films, you know, visually were hugely, you know, inspiring for me. And then thematically, you know, the whole idea of androids, replicants, that kind of thing, for me, it was kind of fascinating. The difference we sort of used with Trinity was really that we set the story in a world where there are no humans left, and really there are only androids left once they've eradicated humans. And where do they go from there? You know, do the same existential issues arise, you know, that we're all suffering from today, the same racial issues, the same existential issues, do those arise in an android society as it evolves? And that's sort of what we were really just touching on the very surface with Trinity, the pilot episode.
Yeah. That's cool. So if you don't mind asking, like, how did you go about funding the film? Because I imagine that, like, couldn't have been easier. I think a lot of people were probably a bit reluctant to put money into, like, some forms of VR at the moment.
Yeah. Well, I'll be honest with you. Most companies have been reluctant right from the start, which I personally feel is a huge failure, particularly on the part of the established film studios, and I would say even some of the game companies, although the game companies have sort of, in some cases, put their money where their mouth is, and, you know, like, you know, Biohazard and other VR experiences like that, which they obviously spent a lot of money on. We're lucky in Canada. We have government film financing and media financing. An organization called the Canadian Media Fund, which actually invested almost $1 million into the pilot episode of Trinity, and then we raised the other $500,000 privately. So this was back in 2015, 2016, when, you know, the potential for VR was kind of, you know, to the sky was kind of the limit back then. And I think after, particularly for live action VR, you know, I think now it's much more difficult. Although I have to say, I'm starting to feel it change. I think, you know, with platforms like Veer and a lot of the other platforms that are already existing, I actually am starting to see that more people are interested in actually taking some risks on content, which I find really exciting.
Yeah. Sticking with that subject, like, how do you see the future of like immersive films going?
Gosh, that's a good question.
I mean, it's a tough one, but
I think it's actually a really valid question. I think, you know, in a lot of ways, we need to do another technology shift in the headset technology. I don't know if it's actually in haptic technology. I love haptic technology, but in some ways I'm not a huge fan of it because I feel that it's only kind of 50% where it needs to be to be truly convincing. And in some ways I think it can actually pull people out of a VR experience because you don't really touch something with haptics. So I don't know. I actually believe that the future in storytelling in VR maybe has a lot more to do with what I would call the loss of body sense. Because right now in VR, we often spend a lot of time trying to emulate, our own bodies. So for instance, with this avatar is sort of a first step towards emulating our own body and an experience. And some of the stories that we're working on right now are stories where we're kind of trying to free people, free people's mind from their body. So I think for us, in terms of our storytelling, that's a direction that we're headed in. With the next episodes of Trinity, we're also experimenting on different kinds of interactivity that may not be exactly like what people are used to. I can't really sort of talk about exactly what they are right now, but sure. The idea really for every episode, new episode of Trinity will be, sorry if you can hear my son crying in the background. every new episode of Trinity, we're kind of trying to do something that hasn't been done before in terms of interactivity. So that's sort of the goal that we're headed toward. And I actually do believe there is a future for it, but I really do believe that there needs to be a lot more investment by the powers that be, the film studios, the game companies. Mm-hmm. There just has to be much more risk taken on content. We've got billions of dollars of hardware in the market right now, and it's great hardware. And we're just not giving the creators enough of a chance to create for it.
Awesome. So how did you go about shooting Trinity? Like, how much of that was done on the set, and how much of that was green screen?
That's actually a great question, because we often, and I think one of the things that I feel most sort of complimented by when people talk about it, is that they talk about the fact that some of the stuff that we actually shot live action, they think is actually 3D animation, which it actually isn't. We did a lot of post-production visual effects on our live action. But the basic production plan was that we spent about a year working on different forms of interactivity overlaid over live action. And then we kind of happened upon, the other problem was, I'm sorry, I'm going to jump all over the place here, but the other issue we were having is that we needed to work on an interactive engine. So we were working with Unity, and Unity was amazing. They were giving us a lot of their betas. And the issue we were having with live action was, how do you transition the way we do in cinema? How do you transition between one live action shot and the next live action shot? And in Unity at the time, that wasn't obvious. So what we needed to do is we needed to find sort of a bridge solution. And so we actually started shooting volumetrically. We did some tests with volumetric capture where we were, I guess what you would say, we were double shooting with a live action 360 cam, on the bottom, and then on the top we were shooting with a volumetric array of Kinects. And so essentially what we were doing is we were capturing all the depth information within about 15 meters of what we were capturing live. And so that, what we did was we used that volumetric information, transformed it into point cloud, and used that volumetric information as a transitional element. And then what we realized was that when we started seeing the volumetric stuff that we were getting, we were thinking, am I allowed to swear in here? Because I was just about to say, holy shit.
No.
So anyway,
So we already got a thumbs up for that. Yeah, we love swearing.
We saw the the volumetric stuff, and we were like, holy shit, this is friggin' beautiful. And we need to actually expand the script and create scenes that are completely volumetric, completely point cloud. And so we originally didn't intend for there to be live action, and I guess what you would call in the game industry, fully live scenes. And so Trinity actually, what you saw, Trinity, there's live action scenes, and anything that kind of looks like sort of matrixy, bluish, and black, those are all actual live game environments within Trinity. Millions and millions of point cloud bits of information, so they're actually quite heavy. And the amazing thing with those scenes that originally were only transitions that actually became scenes within themselves is that we can actually expand any of those live environments into a game. So for instance, once somebody who's in Trinity actually is in that environment, we could have them take a left turn and spend an hour or 2 hours trying to get out of that environment, or you know, had all sorts of gameplay within that environment. So that was sort of how it ended up. Of course, once we started doing point cloud, we had to launch into a whole new level of R&D to, to get things the way we wanted them. So the process was long, but it was really cool. And it was really fun to do.
Awesome. So with the cast, had any of them worked in VR before, or are they like completely new to this?
No. So we actually went to Prague in the Czech Republic to shoot all the live action sequences. Yeah.
Oh wow.
So and the male lead is a guy named Karel Dobry. And the female lead is actually twins, identical twins, Barbara and I'm blanking on the other actor's name.
I'll say she was much this.
I don't know. We originally wanted to cast two sets of twins, male and female, just because for the scenes that we needed to accomplish with androids who are all identical, a male all identical, female all identical, having twins saved us a lot of money. Just because we didn't have to do so much visual effects work, sure. But we only had the women as twins, which ended up indeed saving us quite a bit of time and money. So yeah, Karel actually is probably one of the most famous actors in the Czech Republic. If there's an American movie that shoots in the Czech Republic, Karel is in it. The one that you might recognize him from the most was. One of the main bad guys in Tom Cruise's first Mission Impossible movie way back when.
Okay.
Yeah, he was Vanessa Redgrave's sort of left-hand or right-hand man. And Barbara, the two twins, they're in a ton of stuff as well. So in the Czech Republic. So we spent a week shooting there. For instance, all the live environments that you see, all the huge sets that you see, that was all in the Czech Republic. It was an incredible place to shoot, and Prague is an amazing city.
Awesome. You just answered that, because I was going to ask if the warehouse scene was shot in an actual warehouse, or whether that was green screen.
It was. Was actually shot in a 1920s. I don't know if it's Bauhaus, but it was a 1920s designed and built warehouse. That had these sort of round, big round windows on the ceiling, big vaulted windows, which was incredible. And they originally started building trucks. I think they built Panzer tanks in there as well. Then went back to trucks after World War II. And so that facility where we shot is a huge, huge industrial facility that's all kind of the only people who are in there now are people shooting movies, because it's all derelict and super cool and super freaky and super scary.
That's awesome. So did you come across that location before you went out to Prague, or was it just like you just got out there and went scouting?
No, well, we sent Patrick Boivin, our director, who's an amazing visual director. I don't know if you know of Patrick. If you've ever seen his work, I would highly recommend you see it. He's got like 350 million views on YouTube. He did, you guys might have heard, Dragon Baby and Iron Baby with his kids. Yeah, really cool stuff. Highly recommend. It's Patrick Boivin. So he went to Prague a couple of times to do some location scouting, and he had worked shooting some commercials in the Czech Republic beforehand. And we worked with a company called Bistro Film, Victor Mara at Bistro Film, and they were incredible. They found us all these incredible locations.
Okay. So was the crew from the Czech Republic as well then?
Yeah. Yeah, we brought we brought some of our key crews, some of the key technical crew. So for instance, anyone who was responsible for volumetric capture, we brought the crew. Anyone who was responsible for 360 shooting, we were the ones who brought the crew. All the rest of the crew, lighting, grip, all the keys, creative, production designer, those were all from the Czech Republic.
Cool. And was this Patrick's first VR film, or had he dabbled in it before?
No, it was indeed his first VR film. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. You knocked it out of the park with that then.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. No, I'll tell him. I'll tell him.
Yeah, it just looks visually stunning. So what was the biggest challenge in the making of it?
Gosh, what was the biggest challenge? Well, there were so many. I think honestly, shooting 360 is a huge challenge. Shooting really good 360 is a huge challenge. It requires a lot of planning because it isn't sort of like sort of standard movie shooting where you're just shooting one camera. It's usually an array of cameras in a circular pattern. And you have to be very careful about how actors move. But what we actually decided to do was we developed our own camera rig that allowed us a lot more freedom of the actors. And one of the most important things is that we actually shot in mono, not in stereo. And shooting in mono gives us a much higher resolution. So to the eye, people, when they watch it, just feel like it's just much, much sharper, crisper. And then what we did was we overlaid three-dimensional elements onto that scene with visual effects, which gave people pretty much 100% illusion that it was actually a stereo image, kind of the way our own human eyes work. So that was quite challenging. But really, the biggest challenge for us was the post-production. It was really putting together all of these diverse elements. The video scenes themselves, the actual, files were very, very heavy. The point cloud, the live point cloud scenes were extremely heavy, and getting it to work properly and to be optimal and work properly once we did a build in Unity, that was really the biggest challenge. That took us a solid year before we really got it to where we wanted it to be.
Bad.
And it was,
So
again, it
what camera
was
did you use then? Sorry.
no problem. We used our own camera rig that we developed ourselves.
Okay. That's
Yeah,
very cool.
that was sort of one of the things we Sebastian Goh, my business partner at Unlimited, he did a lot of 3D cinema work. And he actually built one of the first 3D cinema cameras. And so yeah, with that experience of his, we were able to start building our own rigs. Because really early on, we had GoPro rigs and that was it. And the GoPro rigs were fine, but for the level, for the level of work that we wanted to do visually, they just weren't good enough. So
So how long was the production then from start to finish, would you say?
I mean, we started R&D in January of 2016. We shot the live action sequences in November of 2016. And then we actually took, because we were busy working on other stuff to pay the bills. And then we started in again on January and February to do all of the post-production. Once we had done 2 or 3 months of post-production, we actually did a whole other shoot, a green screen and mocap shoot in Montreal, where we flew the actors from Prague to Montreal. That was in March of 2017. Compiled all that and worked on it again for another year until about March of 2018, and then released it fall of 2018.
So that's a
So.
fairly lengthy process.
I mean, it was, but again, during that time, we were busy doing a ton of other stuff. If we like today, with what we know, we could probably complete the whole thing in 6 to 9 months. Yeah,
So
if we were working on it full time.
during that time, was there any like changes in the technology that made you think, oh, wish we could have done that instead or used that?
Gosh, yeah, the technology, there was never anything that we really there was never anything that we looked back on and went, oh crap, if too bad we didn't have that at that time. It was really, I think we were lucky in the sense that as we learned about new technology, we just integrated into what we were doing. As we were going, certain things would become available to us, and we thought, okay, well, let's see if we can integrate that somehow into you know, like for instance, when we first started, we couldn't really do the interactive rain. And about a year after we started, you know, somebody had done an upgrade or somebody had created a plugin, and suddenly we were able to do that effect. So as stuff came out, you know, and the devs kind of would come to us with ideas and they say, hey, look what I found. And we'd be like, oh, that's so awesome. Let's use that. That is so cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, there was nothing though that we looked back on and sort of went, you know, crap. You know, that I have to say is interesting. Nobody's ever asked that question before, but yeah, that didn't happen.
Yeah. Cool. So like what advice would you give to like any other creators that were looking to get into VR films?
Gosh, I don't know. I think, you know, it's funny. I was attending, I don't know if anyone's heard of MuTech, but it's a conference that's held pretty much around the world. So I was attending MuTech Montreal, and we were attending a financing conference. And, you know, a lot of the bigger companies who work in VR, you know, companies like Felix and Paul and Atlas V were there. Mm-hmm. And overall, it was a little bit dire, you know, just kind of what we were talking about before. But I think, you know, the fact of the matter is that they're like it is with filmmaking. There are a lot of great, you know, low cost VR cameras that you can get into it with. You know, both Unity and Unreal now are doing incredible photorealistic, you know, environments and characters. It's what I always said to young filmmakers when people come up and ask me that question in the film business, you know, how do I get into the film business? And I was just like, you know, just pick up some equipment and go for it. You know, that's how I got in, you know, that's how I learned. And, you know, if you wait for somebody else to be the gatekeeper, you know, chances are you're not going to get stuff done. And so I think for, you know, sort of independent VR creators, whether it be live action or whether it be, you know, games or whatever, I think actually the opportunities are greater now than even were 2 or 3 years ago, because we have all these incredible platforms and they all need content. So
yeah,
I would just say, you know, just go for it. Just go for it.
Yeah. And I think as well, because there's not as many people doing it, it's easier to get your project seen as well. Unlike a traditional film where there's, you know, the market's so down with, you know, 1 million and 1 films coming out. As there's not as many VR films, you're more likely to get noticed and a bit of press out there, which is good.
Yeah, and I think there are, you know, there are funds, you know, I mean, Oculus's focus is really kind of artistic. HTC Vive, you know, has a production fund. You guys are investing in production as well. So as I was saying, I'm feeling kind of more optimistic about the medium now than I have actually for the last 2 years.
Yeah, definitely. So before we go to the audience for questions and stuff, what's up for you guys next? So there's going to be like more episodes of Trinity, hopefully.
We're working on a second follow-up episode of Trinity, which is actually probably going to be more 3D. It will be sort of more in the, I guess we would call, the point cloud world. Just because we can do it on a little bit more of a reasonable budget. I don't know that we'll be able to raise $1.5 million per episode the way we did in the past, although we wouldn't need to anymore. I wouldn't be anywhere near that high. And we're also working on, as I was saying before, we're working on another story that really is just cutting people away from their bodies, just sort of freeing people from their bodies, and a story that's completely in the mind. That's sort of something that we're really excited about.
Awesome. That sounds really exciting.
And we're doing a ton of, you know, on the bread and butter side, we're doing a ton of immersive learning work these days, which is great.
That's pretty cool.
A lot of, a lot of educational and medical stuff, work in autism, bullying,
work
on, Yeah, we're actually doing a project on adolescent you know, mental well-being, sort of suicide prevention, a lot of story,
yeah,
a lot
yeah.
of stuff
oh,
like
yeah,
that.
See.
Yeah.
Yeah, no,
yeah,
I'm
it's
I'm
really
looking
cool.
on something similar at the end of this month as well, so that's
Yeah.
pretty cool.
Oh yeah, we'd love to hear about it. We should get together. We'll get together offline sometime and talk about it.
Yeah, definitely. Sounds good. Cool. Well, thanks, man. Right, so anyone have any questions for John? Don't be shy. We're all friends here. Just raise your hand. Your virtual hand.
Oh, everyone's high. Everyone's moving away.
Anyone? Yeah, so here we go.
Oh, there we go.
Khalil Vibes. How's it going, dude? You might need to unmute yourself first, dude.
All right, there we go.
There we go. Here we
so
go.
My question for you, you said for like anyone that's like inspiring to be like a game developer and wanting to get into, you know, maybe like some type of VR film, as far as, you know, going out and getting the equipment for like, for example, say like you want to do like motion capture, would you be able to use like your base stations for your motion capture, or like invest in base stations to use for motion capture software, or are there like other technologies you would need?
Well, I have to say I'm not 100% sure, and I apologize. I'm not the most technical guy. I sometimes sound like I am, but I'm not. When you say base station, do you mean, well, for instance, to give you an example, we used an array of Microsoft Kinects to capture some of our mocap.
Yeah.
If you're talking about that as a base station, yeah, that would be one solution. But I think there's a company that makes a really inexpensive mocap suit right now, which, you know, it's all relative. You know, it's maybe, I don't know, $800 or something like that, which is still expensive. But compared to, you know, how expensive, you know, mocap traditionally has been, that's like nothing. And chances are, in wherever, whatever city you live in, chances are there's somebody who has that technology who's willing to rent it out to you. So you spend one day and you pay whatever, you know, $100 or something like that to actually shoot all your mocap or capture all your mocap stuff. I think you know, there are a couple of options, and as we progress, I actually believe, you know, mocap is going to become something that will be as standard as, you know, as our webcams are on our computers.
All right, cool. My other question would be like, as far as like the equipment that you used for like your VR, like the cameras, the cheap cameras that you were talking about. Where would we go? Could we go to like a local Best Buy and pick up one of these cameras?
I don't know if you'd be able to pick up, I mean, there probably would be something, you know, the Theta isn't really a great camera. The Best Buy or B&H or something like that usually has some interesting 360 cameras, but you can just order them online on Amazon too. You know, the Insta360, they make actually a pretty cool, decent camera that has auto stitching software included in the package. And the result is actually pretty good. You know, we basically got out of what I would call the, you know, I don't want to call it the low end side of the VR business, but, you know, projects that when we started, we were charging $15,000 or $20,000 to do. There are people now with lower end cameras doing them for $3,000 or $4,000. And it's just not a market we can compete in anymore. That's because of the quality of the cameras that are available right now for not a lot of money. And again, it's a considerable amount of money, but you can rent these cameras as well. Depending on where you are, there is a rental facility in Los Angeles, for instance, that'll ship, you know, a VR camera pretty much anywhere in the United States and Canada, actually, but anywhere in the United States for not a lot of money and actually a really good camera. For a really weekly, a decent, you know, reasonable weekly rate. But there are a lot of cities that you can buy these cameras. Probably, I don't know about Best Buy, but you could certainly get it on Amazon. You get a decent camera for probably $1,000, $1,200 now.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the Insta 360 One X is a good one. I think that's around $400, give or take.
Okay.
And actually, it's about 5.7K. But the image is good. It's really good. I definitely recommend it. And I'm not on commission. that's just a genuine thought. Anyone else? Anyone else have any questions for John? Oh, Iwazaro. I'm sorry if I absolutely butchered that. But I tried. Go for it. There you go.
So, what do you see as like the common mistakes done when shooting a VR film? For example, when I was watching one of like a VR, what now?
Oh. What's that?
You okay?
Oh yeah.
So we lost you there.
Oh, sorry. So, yeah, I was wondering whether, like, the common mistakes done when shooting a VR film.
The VR, if you're shooting actually live action VR, I mean, they always say in film that, you know, a film is won or lost. Oh, he disappeared. A film is won or lost.
Oh, is there real thing? There it is.
Oh, he is?
There he is. Okay. Yeah, he's there.
Okay. A film is won or lost in casting. In VR, a film is won or lost when you're shooting it. Because it's all about how, you know, how you plan the way you're going to shoot. So, for instance, we used to get a lot of companies, you know, who had shot VR. I guess they were VR companies, but they didn't really know how to shoot VR. And they would come to us and ask us to fix the VR that they shot because they couldn't either stitch it together or, you know, it was overly, you know, they were having all sorts of parallax, what are called parallax issues, which is people passing from one lens to the other, you know, within a space that's too close. So, and it's just because they didn't understand the basic technology of how a VR, a multi-camera VR camera works. And so once you understand that and the principles are very, very simple, it's really, really simple to actually shoot a great scene in VR. Rest is all up to you, how well you've written it and how great it's acted or how great the action is. And that's really up to you as a creator and as a director. But technically, you just need to understand how the camera works, whichever camera you're working with. And there are a number of different types of cameras. So yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Good question.
Because I had a friend who used, like, she read cameras for the shoot they had to do VR.
She used which camera?
Red camera. There were three red cameras.
Tricky.
Yeah.
The problem, the you know, a red camera is a great camera. It's an incredible camera. But if you're using three red cameras in a circular array, you're usually shooting a big, huge panoramic VR experience. If that's what she was doing, that was great. If she was shooting anything with people within, I would say with that setup, if she was shooting people within, you know, 20 or 30 feet, it probably ended up creating a lot of issues for her. I don't know how it ended up. I'm sure her shots looked amazing, but essentially the way VR cameras work, and I don't have two hands here to work with, but you know, you can actually shoot stereo with two cameras, one lens here, one lens here, and you get a fantastic stereo image, but it's really all about how far the lenses are apart. And basically you have to emulate our own eyes because our own eyes are only a very short distance apart. Of course, it varies between all sorts of different people, but it's that difference that creates the stereo image. And human eyes don't really have parallax the way film lenses do or film camera lenses do. So anyway, it's a great camera to use as long as you're shooting the right thing. So you really have to match the camera. And the idea is that you want to have, a 360 camera with what we would call a very, very, very tight array. So you'd want to have those lenses as close together as possible. And that will give you the least parallax issues and will create the least amount of post-production work that you have to do to get perfectly clean images at the end.
Nice.
Getting really technical in here.
Yeah. It's good though. It's a good question. Anyone else? Anyone else have any questions? Roll up. Sure, Max, yes. Go for it. You're up.
So my question is about distribution opportunity.
Okay.
What size of the market as far as an audience, and is it currently profitable to put this kind of effort into something? Is there enough eyeballs looking for content? And then I guess also a side question to that would be platform dependent, like what platforms do you target, or are you able to target all of them as far as headsets?
Well, that's a great question. And Daniel could probably help me out with this one a little bit too. I think it really depends on what market you're going after. If you wanted to do the next episodes of Trinity will have a lot more gameplay in them. Because the bet that we took when we first started doing VR back in 2015 was that cinematic VR, people were going to want it to be less game-like. And I think quite the opposite is true today. I think if people are going to enjoy a cinematic VR experience, it really does need to be interactive. Not necessarily a first-person shooter type of interactivity, but they really do need to interact with the story much more than we have in this original first episode of Trinity. So I would say that, my recommendation for somebody getting into VR is if you want to go out and raise $1.5 million to do a VR experience, your chances, if you're going to do something like Trinity, your chances of seeing your money back these days are probably fairly slim. Whereas if you're going to go out and do something like Beat Saber, you've made $1 million or more. There are other projects like I Expect You to Die. There's a whole bunch of, sort of interactive story game-ish type projects that are really doing quite well. But I think it's a little bit more on the game side. Whereas I think what we're trying to accomplish here with Trinity and with Veers, we're really trying to develop much more of the cinematic side. And so at the moment, I would say that, if you can figure out a way to do something on a more reasonable budget, say only a few $100,000, I'd say your chances of, of making your money back and even making some profit are pretty good. If you're going to go out and spend a couple of $1 million, then maybe it's maybe a bigger risk right now. So in terms of the markets, it all depends on what you want to go for. There's all sorts of different markets. For the interactive version of Trinity, there's the standard markets like HTC Vive and Oculus and Sony PlayStation. But then, of course, there's more linear versions of it, and that we have Oculus and platforms like Veer. There's also all of the location-based outlets now that you have, where people are sort of going to more the VR arcade style places and doing VR experiences there. So that's a market as well. That market is really now becoming much more of a multiplayer game market as well. There certainly is no lack of markets out there, but I think different products suit the different platforms, more than others. So it's really just a question of deciding which one you want to do, and then choosing your platforms. But there are a lot of platforms out there to potentially get your, to get your product in front of, the millions of users that we have access to. Because there's at least, I don't know, what are, I mean, the numbers these days for high-end headsets are probably close to 12 million, 11, 12 million. And then for more standard headsets like the Go, I think, you know, I don't even know, it's tens of millions for sure.
Mm.
So there's a huge market out there. It's just a question of, you know, of creating something that's going to break through. So, and it's, there have already been breakthroughs, there'll be more.
Big thanks to John for taking the time out of his hectic schedule to take part in the event. And a special thanks to Veer for letting me release the interview on the podcast. There'll be many more to come. If you enjoyed it as well, feel free to subscribe for more interviews as well as conversational episodes with myself and Alex. Also, I'd be super grateful if you could give us a nice review on iTunes, as it really helps. If there are any VR filmmakers you would like me to try and get on the podcast, or if you're one yourself and want to jump on an episode to talk about your work, feel free to reach out to me on either Instagram or Twitter at Daniel K. Hatton. That's H-A-T-T-O-N. And on that note, thank you again for listening. Really appreciate your support, and I shall see you on the next one.